Hi, everybody. My name is Scott Hillier, and I'm back with Jim Epps, and welcome to our second module in our five-module course on shipping your Office 365 app to the Office Store. In this one, Module 2, what we're going to do is talk a little bit about some architecture of apps and give a little bit of background, but then we're going to spend time demoing some of the apps that come from the store, just so you can get a good idea of the types of things that are available in the store. And I'm going to turn it over to Jim to get us started. Jim, why don't you go ahead?
Sure, thanks. Okay, so yes, the highlight, the star of this module is definitely the demos, but we did also want to begin by laying out the basic app shapes, the way the apps are architected. If you've taken other MVA classes, you probably have had quite a bit of extensive training in this area, so we're going to go through that pretty quickly because it's, in some case, a review of some things you've seen before. The vision slide, the classic vision slide that always opens up every MVA module this year, and there's three pillars: Extend Office Everywhere, which is really surfacing our apps everywhere in the Office 365 surface, as well as in every device. Also, connected Office 365 services, pillar number two, which is really about APIs for everything and all Office data. Excuse me. And then finally, building using open platform, meaning that you don't have to necessarily use the Office development tools. You can build on other platforms as well and leverage Office data. So, an overview of app types supported in the store. First, in terms of development options, before 2013, we had things like extending the Office Ripon, COM add-ins, macros, and Visto, really focused on the on-prem story. These kinds of add-ins are not supported in the Office Store, just so you're aware. It's really a cloud app model that we're focused on in the Office Store. What we do support, though, are the new modern cloud-based apps, you know, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript types of apps. And we support three kinds of apps, three shapes: task pane apps, which run alongside the app, content apps, which run within the app, and mail apps. The Office 2013 web app, which is the free Office client, also supports the Office Cloud app model. Task pane, content, and mail app shapes are also supported there. Not quite as robust a story in terms of clients supported and the functionality, but we're getting there. We're playing catch up. App shapes. Task pane apps, as I already said, run adjacent to the document and are offered on a number of different clients. Content apps are in the body, and mail apps, both read and compose. We added compose apps earlier in 2014 so that you can, if there's content in a mail you're composing, the app will trigger if it recognizes something that's pertinent to the app and let you invoke the app and generate some kind of an app experience or content result. Here's some samples of some common apps. These are task pane apps. So this is a March Madness bracket that's running within Word. Here is the Bing News Search. So you launch the app in the task pane, and it will search text within the document and then generate search results using Bing. And then finally, Merriam-Webster Dictionary. You can click on a file entry or a text string in Excel, and it will generate a definition in the app next door. Here are some content apps. Again, these are ones that render the results right within the surface area of the Office client. So here you have a table of states with some data attached, and it'll generate pie charts and a map, a big map that lays out that data right within the Excel file. And that will travel with the file if you mail as an attachment as well. Here's another sample content app that generates a very rich and immersive visualization of dry data. And here's one that generates bubble charts out of content in the file, in the Excel file. Here's some sample mail apps. So here the app has detected that there is a FedEx number within the body of the email. And so if you were to click on the Package Tracker app, and you can see they run in a thin band across the top of the email pane. If it were instead a business person's name, you could trigger the LinkedIn app and generate their profile on LinkedIn. And then here's a Reply Later app. So again, it picked up the word meeting, the content in the app, and it can generate an automated reply based on the text in the mail file. There's also three shapes for SharePoint apps: full page apps, parts, and UI command extensions. Full page is exactly what it implies. It runs across the full page inside the SharePoint experience and has various Chrome controls to make the app look like it's actually part of that SharePoint site. Parts can interact with, it's very much like web parts. They can interact at the web part level. And then UI command extensions, things in the ribbon and drop lists and drop list items and menus and things of that sort. So here's some example of SharePoint apps. This is a full page app. It's a PDF publisher, so you can take any document and convert it into a PDF. Here is the AvePoint Meetings solution, also full page, which lets you create a meeting workflow. And then here's some AvePoint app parts for SharePoint. So down here you have this world clock and weather. And you can generate that from an app part button in the ribbon. And here's a UI command version. So again, you have a tab within SharePoint to invoke this functionality. So that's just a real quick review. Again, there's been other MVA classes that have gone into more detail on building each of these types of apps. So we just wanted to refresh your memory on these are the sorts of app shapes you can build today for the store. Those are more coming. And so I'm going to turn it over to Scott to talk through, again, very quickly at a high level, the architecture of these different app types.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jim. So when it comes to the architecture of store apps, let's first talk about the apps for Office. So the anatomy for the app for Office that's in the store is we have two key things going on. We have the app manifest and the web page. So essentially what you're creating is you're creating an app manifest that has things like the name of the app for Office, the ID of it, the version, information like that. And then your functionality is created by using client-side components. So you're going to create something like JavaScript elements in order to create that functionality. So the architecture involves those two key things, an app manifest and some JavaScript that's going to be hosted on a server. When it comes to SharePoint, SharePoint is a very rich environment for us to be able to build apps because we have lots and lots of building blocks that we can use. If you're an old school SharePoint developer, the good news about building SharePoint apps is that you can take advantage of all your SharePoint knowledge in creating your apps, and you can make use of things like lists and libraries the functionality found inside of pillars inside of SharePoint. If you're new to SharePoint, if you haven't done a lot of work in that space, you'll find that the ability to access things like lists and libraries is actually very straightforward and can be done using skills that you already have. A little bit more on that as we go along. For SharePoint apps themselves, it's important to understand how they're all put together. Again, if you're an old school SharePoint developer, then you sort of understand this hierarchy that I'm presenting to you on the slide here right now, which is web application, site collection, and site. When it comes to SharePoint, that's the basic one-to-many relationship. A web application contains many site collections, contains many sites, and we're interested in deploying our applications within a particular site. So we can create one of two things. We can create a SharePoint-hosted app, or we can create a provider-hosted app. And the SharePoint-hosted app is hosted within SharePoint. It uses SharePoint infrastructure as the place where things are deployed. And the provider-hosted app uses external infrastructure. So we could, for example, simply use Azure websites as a place to host that app. But one of the great things, Jim, about the architecture of these SharePoint apps is we don't have to be limited to just Microsoft technology. So if I'm building a provider-hosted app, sure, maybe I have Azure that I'm using, but I could also use something like Apache. So here you see app number 3 is a provider-hosted app that might be using an Apache backend. And then I could even have it on different sites. And you can also see app number 4 is just using an IIS web server. So the key takeaway from this slide is that really any cloud-based technology, any hosting environment that you want to use as the basis for your app is possible with the app model, and it really opens it up to developers of all stripes, not just folks who have done SharePoint in the past. When we're talking to things that are inside of SharePoint, I had said earlier that it's as easy to talk to things inside SharePoint as for non-SharePoint developers as it is to talk to just about anything else. And the reason for that is that we provide a rich set of APIs that you can talk to. And there's really two main approaches. One is to use something that we call the client-side object model, which is a JavaScript object model that is object-based. It allows you to use a series of objects, a set of objects, to talk to back-end SharePoint resources like lists and document libraries. But there's also support for RESTful services. So, you know, web developers are used to calling RESTful services in the work that they do. They can call RESTful services to talk to SharePoint. So these are the two main APIs that we have. And in combination with the cloud-based technologies that are good for you, the skills that you have, those are the ways that you would interact with SharePoint to create a SharePoint app. Once that app gets created, then you'll want to package and publish that. So we'll talk a lot about that publishing process and getting them into the store, but the basic packaging and publishing involves creating a .app file, so an app file. That's the output from the work that you do in Visual Studio. And then that app file can either go into the Office Store, where it will be available for selling, or it can go into one of the app catalogs, which is a mechanism for getting apps out to users without having to go through the store. So you really have two approaches. Either you can build an app purposely for the purpose of selling it, or you can build it for, say, your organization and deploy it to everybody using an app catalog. When we think about the sample scenarios across these various app types, we can, of course, create just straight-up apps, so apps for SharePoint or apps for Office in this case. And, you know, these are some of the things that we get out of it and why we might care about it. So certainly, even with just a straight-up app for Office, we're going to be able to use rich web content within that. Anything really that we can use on the client side is going to be supported there in the app for Office. And we're going to be able to take advantage of, you know, contextual services and workflow within that to make it rich and useful for end users. But then we can even go further. So there's this idea of taking many of these apps, one or many of these apps for Office, and putting them together in such a way that you can create a more of a total solution using a document template. And a document template would allow someone to discover your app by simply installing that template directly from an Office product. And now they wouldn't even have to necessarily go to the store to get the content authoring, the forms, et cetera, that might go along with that. And then finally, we can take that document template and we could deploy that as part of an app for SharePoint. And when we do that, we have even more functionality contained within one single package here, really bringing us to a place where we can take advantage of everything that SharePoint has to offer and everything that Office has to offer. Okay, great. So, Jim, I think we've reached the point where we're ready to do a few demos, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And you're going to start us out, right?
I am.
Okay, why don't you take it away and show us?
Great. Well, I'm going to take us into this with a very simple but quite popular app called Poll Everywhere. And the interesting thing about this was built on Ruby on Rails, so it didn't use Microsoft technology at all in terms of the actual crafting of the application. It does run in Office, of course, and they have a tiered offering, including a free one where you can get up to 40 responses per poll. It's just a single user on the account, up to premium features where you can have up to 20,000 people and 10 admins. So what they've built then is they're using the app in the store as a way to say, hey, look at us. It's fun to try. It's fun to play with. But if you're a serious business and you want to do serious polling where you can do customer segmentation, you can filter who's allowed to respond to the poll, you can do data analysis, all those sorts of things, you want to move up to their professional one. So we're going to be demonstrating the free Poll Everywhere app that's in the store. And so if you look to the right there, that's kind of what it looks like. So we're going to build very quickly our own Poll Everywhere poll. So I'm going to escape out of the main presentation mode so I can go into Insert And here's the example of where the app is exposed right within the PowerPoint experience. These are some of the apps I've previously acquired from the store, and there's Poll Everywhere. So I'm going to click that and click Insert. And here you can choose, you can have true false statements, you can have multiple choice, you can have short answer, you can even develop word cloud. So if people, if you ask, if you think of X, what's the word that comes to mind most readily, and people could answer, you could do this with thousands of people in a conference, and they would build a word cloud showing what were the most prominent answers. You can also insert an existing poll, which we'll do in just a second. But in terms of creating a new poll, that you can see how quickly you can build out a poll. So this is a very simple one. I'm just going to use the default one the Poll Everywhere shows, which is what is your favorite color, red, blue, green. And here you can decide if you want to allow only a single response or or allow people to vote multiple times. So I'm going to insert that poll. And so here you have a very basic interface. But if you go up here, you can change the color scheme. You can change, you know, you can display or not display the title if you so choose. You can you can display the response options. You can change from a bar graph to a column chart. Okay, there we go.
It's Ryan.
There. Yeah, it's a little connectivity is a little slow today. You can change the colors. You can do a whole bunch of things. You can do counts or percentages. So there's quite a bit of configuration, even within this free version of the application. So talking about the marketing components, make sure that your free version does some cool stuff and save the really robust things for your professional and paid version. So I'm not going to configure it too much. We're just going to go ahead and there it is. There's the favorite color. So to join this poll, someone would have to first register by texting that number. Scott and I have already done that. So Scott, tell me what your favorite color is. He's going to text. Oh, I need to go into full presentation mode so you can vote.
Let me see it.
Exactly.
There it is. Yay. All right.
Just 1 second. There we go.
All right, there we go. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and text my answer in right now, since I've already joined. And there you go.
His favorite color is red.
There you go.
So we use this all the time when we do presentations on the road, when we do presentations to large crowds. Imagine a room full of 800 people, and you ask them a question about what version of SharePoint are you on? And you could have a poll where you list all the different versions, and you have 800 people respond with their cell phone instantly, hey, that you know this is what I use, and you can get a quick read on the room. So that's that. We're going to move on now to a pre-built poll. Oops, sorry. Right here. And the poll here is, will the Seahawks win the Super Bowl? This is all going down right now in Redmond, Washington. So obviously we have a local fan base that feels very strongly that the Seahawks are going to win. But Scott is from the Washington, D.C. area. He's maybe a little more skeptical. So we're each going to respond here. So we're kind of cheating because there's only two of us. And so I've configured this particular poll to allow multiple votes. But if we wanted to, we could essentially say you only get to vote once. You also buy the... Oh, he's really killing me here. Wait a minute. I got to fight back.
Keep talking.
Oh, no. No.
I don't know. Should I be doing this? Get myself... Wait,
trying to catch up.
Maybe I'll switch to C.
There you go.
That way I can't get in trouble.
There you go. So, but what we wanted to convey here is just how quickly this real-time poll responds to a text message sent over a phone. And even within the free solution here, you can also configure these polls to work via Twitter. You can actually push it out to a website on polleverywhere.com. And so people could log on via a browser and vote that way. It will store results. Again, you can do all sorts of things like analytics for the paid versions. You can have custom answers. Right now we're voting ABC, but you can create the ability to answer actually yes, no, or no idea. So there's quite a bit more functionality if you're buying the paid version, and they have five tiers of paid versions. But even the simple free app is pretty cool to do real-time polling. So that's the Poll Everywhere demo.
Okay, great. So I guess I'm up next. I'm going to do is talk about DocuSign. So DocuSign is a product that folks may be familiar with already, but it supports electronic document signing. And what I'm going to do is show you how the app fits into SharePoint Online and into Outlook, also up in the cloud. And so the scenario I'm going to paint for you, I'm going to walk you through a little bit of a story here. So the first thing I'm going to do is introduce you to my project website. So we're going to imagine that we have a new project going on. It's our cloud migration project. And we've got some vendors that are helping us with our cloud migration project. So I'm going to use a SharePoint site to manage my cloud migration project. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to be able to share that with the vendors so they can come in externally and they can do some work with me. So I'm going to start by showing you this cloud migration project site here. So here it is, pretty straightforward. You know, we've got some documents and tasks and calendar items on here. You know, it's a pretty straightforward site. But one of the things that I want to do with this is I want to be able to share it with my vendors. So I'm going to come into the admin side here. And we're going to go to SharePoint administration. And I'm just going to show you quickly how you can share that with external folks by clicking on the settings over here. And then if we scroll down, we'll be able to see external sharing here. And I'm allowing both external users who accept sharing invitation and anonymous guest links to come in. So I've allowed that to happen. Now, what I'm running here, just to be clear with everybody, is I have a test tenant that I'm using. So I'm not paying too much concern for actually whether or not I want everybody coming in anonymous or what have you. So it's really just to support our scenario idea here. But the idea is I've opened up this cloud migration project site now to external folks. So now my idea is that I would like for my vendors to be able to come in and sign some documentation I need signed before they're going to be allowed to do any work for me. And I'm going to do that with DocuSign. So what first I'm going to have to do is add DocuSign to our team site. And I'll do that within the team site by clicking on Site Contents, and then by clicking on Add an App. And from here, I'll go to the SharePoint store. And within the SharePoint store now, I'm going to go ahead and just search for DocuSign. And you can see there's the DocuSign for SharePoint app. And I could simply go ahead and click on it and install it. Well, if you were paying attention, you probably noted that I already had it installed, which is fine. So let's come back into the Cloud Migration Project site here, look at the site contents. And you'll see, in fact, that I do actually have it installed already. I did that before we got started. But what happens when you install this? So what happens after it gets installed on a site is if you go to a document library, you'll see within that document library that DocuSign has now made itself known. So within SharePoint Online, I have a new tab in my document library now for DocuSign. So that's pretty neat. They're extending the ribbon as part of this app that gets installed. So now once I have that DocuSign capability inside of my library, I can go ahead and prepare a document for signature. And all I have to do is come to the document library, click on the menu that's here, the edit control block, drop this thing down, and you'll see that here where we have some additional options, I can go ahead and say I would like to get signatures for this document using DocuSign. I'm going to go ahead and click on that. Says it's working on it for a second, and then it's going to take me over to DocuSign where it invites me to sign in. Now, this is cool because I can just go ahead and sign in with my same Office 365 account that I was using inside of SharePoint. So I don't have to know anything new. In fact, it's going to be pretty smart about that here because I already have signed in. So it knows, you know, I've got the cookie already in place, and I can just go ahead and click I want to sign in. It takes care of it for me, and it brings me into DocuSign. Now, from here, what I can do is I can prepare this document for collecting these signatures by setting up this recipients and routing right here. So I've got a dummy account that we're going to go ahead and use for the vendor. So this is a separate Microsoft account here. Scott Hillier at Outlook.com. We'll go ahead and use that one. And we're going to call that the vendor right there. And we're going to add that signer. And you can see now that we've got the vendor listed as somebody who can sign. And now what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and add ourselves, because my idea here is that the vendor is going to fill out this form and sign it, and then they're going to send it back to me, and I'm going to sign it. And between the two of us, we're going to have everything that we need to go ahead then and move ahead with the project. So I'm going to come back to DocuSign, and I'm going to click the Add Me link, which will go ahead and add me inside there as a person who's going to sign. And then if I look at the order diagram here, it gives me a little pretty picture about how we're going to progress through this. You can see that the vendor and I both have to sign before things are going to be complete. And then we can say we're all done. Okay, now that I'm done with laying out the workflow, I need to go ahead and put in the signature pieces here. So I'm going to go ahead, notice up here we can pick either the vendor or me. So I'm going to pick the vendor, and then we're going to come down to the signature block area here. We'll just keep it simple. I'll go ahead and grab a signature block and drop it on here for the vendor like that. And then I'm going to go ahead and change this to me. And I'm going to go ahead and drop this down here for me to sign. And then when I'm all done with that, I can go ahead and click the send button down here at the bottom. Oh, there we go. And it says, oh, would you like to do a preview? You don't have to, but let's go ahead and say yes, let's do a preview. And we can kind of see what it's going to look like when somebody returns it. Somebody receives it, and if we're happy with all that, then by all means, let's just go ahead and send it, which it does. Okay, so now it's off and it's been sent. Let's go ahead and close this tab for a second here, and I'm going to go ahead and open up a new browser here, and let's log in using that vendor account, that mock vendor account that I set up. So home.live.com, and we're going to log in with scotthillier@outlook.com. Click sign in. Okay, and now you can see a couple of things have happened here. There's a sharing message. Scott Hillier wants to share documents with you. So This is the information that you'll see, the messages that go out when you're sharing a site with the vendor. So I could share the site with the vendor, I could share a document with the vendor, and then this is really a SharePoint, Office 365 thing, where we're allowing people who don't have an Office 365 account to come into an Office 365 site for the purpose of sharing something specific. So, you know, that's not really a DocuSign thing per se, but it's part of what makes this whole thing work well, is that I don't necessarily have to have people who just have Office 365 accounts doing the work. Well, we can also see at the top of the list here that we've gotten an email that says, please sign this document. So I'm going to go ahead and click on that to open it up. And let's review the document now. And remember, I'm the vendor, right? So this is supposed to be the vendor in action here. And you can see that it's asking me for a signature down there. First, I have to agree to abide by electronic signature. And then when I do, I can go ahead and click the sign. It will ask me to make up a signature. I'm just going to leave it like this, vendor, and we'll say that's okay. Click sign, and then click finish, and I've now signed the document as the vendor. It pops up here and asks me if if I'd like some more information. So I'm done signing, but now you can see sort of the pitch to move on, which is interesting, right? And then what we can do is let's bounce out of this and come back now to me as the customer, right? So now I'm going to log in as the customer who initiated this. So I'm back in Office 365 now, and I'm going to jump over to Outlook where I have my mail. And we'll see that DocuSign has also sent me email asking me to sign the document. It's coming. All right, so there it is right there. we can see that that it's telling me that the vendor has already reviewed the document, right? So it's telling me the vendor has viewed the document, and I got a signature notification as well. So I can go ahead and say, I'd like to review the document now. Go ahead and log in. Okay. And now, if we go down to the bottom, you can see it wants me to sign. So the vendor signed. Now I'm going to sign. Go ahead and click on this. It adopted my signature right there, and we can go ahead and finish it up. Okay, and now the workflow is finished. The document has been signed. That's great. If we come back now and we go to the original team site where I had this whole thing set up, our cloud migration project, and we come back to the original document library where I initiated this from, you'll see that there's a folder in here called DocuSign Documents. And if I pop this open, you'll see that what we've got inside of here are some PDF files. So what we've done previously here is we've done this process and directed it to actually drop them into the document library. So you can actually get then a PDF signed version of this document dropped into the document library where it was initiated. And you can see the signatures and the record tracking that goes on for that document that got signed. So it does a great job of keeping track of where of the document flow, giving you status, and also giving you the information when it's all over that it's been properly signed. So that's DocuSign in a nutshell.
Thanks, Scott. Yep. Yeah, and DocuSign has really actually invested quite heavily in the Office platform. They have app versions as well for Word and Outlook. And when you showed the authenticate via Office 365, they have in fact have registered their application with Azure AD, which lets them, you know, get that federated sign-on experience as well. You don't have to sign in with another set of credentials. So they're moving already into the Office 365 world as well. So, so they are very active on the Office Store.
All right, great. So should I show you another one?
Sure, please do.
So I've got a second one that that I'm going to demo for you. This one uses Nimble CRM. If you're unfamiliar with Nimble CRM, let's go ahead and take a quick look at what it does. It's pretty straightforward, but I'm going to come into a test account that I've set up for this. Inside of Nimble. And we'll give it a start chance here to fire up. Okay. All right. So what Nimble does is Nimble is a CRM system that allows you to connect to your different, you know, quote, networks, your social networks, and then pull that information into a single view of all the different contacts and relationships that you have. So what we're looking at here to start with is the actual Nimble application. So you can see I'm just in, again, the actual Nimble application, not really anything to do with SharePoint or Office. And you can see that it gives me sort of, you know, a dashboard view of things that are going on in my network. I can click on contacts and see all the different contacts that I have from my network, so people that I'm following. It just gives me a way to pull all that social information together. So once we have this thing in place, then what we can do is utilize the Nimble app to make use of this information without having to actually go to Nimble. So this time what we'll do is we're going to come back to our SharePoint tenant here that we've been using, and I'll go ahead and sign into that. Okay. All right, and then we're going to jump over to Outlook here. And I'll show you how I got the Nimble app. So I'm interested again in using that information here inside of Office. So if I come up to my drop-down menu, you'll see that I have this Manage Apps menu item right here within Outlook. I go ahead and click on Manage Apps. And it's going to bring me to a page to show me the apps that I have installed in Outlook. and you'll see that I do, in fact, have the Nimble app for Outlook already installed. If I didn't have it installed, I could simply click the plus here and say I'd like to add it from the Office Store, come to the Office Store, and go looking for Nimble, okay? And then here's the Nimble app for Outlook right there. And that's how I get it installed. Well, now that it's installed, I mean, you know, what can we do with it? So if you're inside of Outlook and you have these apps installed, these apps for Office are all contextual. So they look for information within the body of the app that tells them there's a reason that they should surface. So when it comes to the Nimble app, what it's doing is it's looking for emails that are either from contacts within your social network or are related to contacts within your social network. And then it will show you additional information about those contacts or related contacts based on that email. So you really don't have to do much to use it. All you really need to do is come over and take a look at an email, click on that email, and if there's something for Nimble to care about, then what you'll see is the Nimble app for Outlook will come up in the bar here, and you can simply click on it, and here I am now. You can see that I've received an email from John Ferrara. Well, John Ferrara is the CEO at Nimble, so what's going on is that I'm in the middle of a trial of Nimble, and so I'm getting emails from John Ferrara, but Nimble is smart enough to know that his profile is in fact part of that social network in my Nimble account, and now it's surfacing that information. So again, it's allowing you to pull together all your different social networks into a single view and then make use of that information within Outlook when you receive emails from people who are related to that social network. So that's a pretty cool little app, pretty easy to use, and you know, you can get started right away with a free trial on most of these. So
exactly,
very straightforward.
Yeah, LinkedIn, Facebook, Google, and Twitter.
Twitter. Yep. All those things.
Networks can be brought together.
Yep. Good. All right. So I think you're up.
I'm going to bring us home.
All right. Let's do it.
So I'm going to talk about Nintex, which is one of our leading ISVs. They have, they're one of the more popular workflow companies, software companies in the world, 5,000 plus customers in 90 countries. And they claim, based on Forrester research study, that if you create workflow within their solution, you get it done 60% faster than if you did it in SharePoint Designer or Visual Studio. So I guess we have some catch up to do, Scott.
That's pretty good.
Or maybe we just let Nintex carry the ball.
Oh, they'd love to hear that, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, because it's a SharePoint app, it must be installed to a specific SharePoint site by someone with site admin privileges. And on the workflow, on the provider hosting side, it's hosted in Azure. So I'm going to drop out of this for a second and just show you. If I go to the Office Store and type in Nintex, there are the two Nintex options there in the store. So again, if I were to click here to install, it would tell me that I need to be a site admin. If I am, it would give me a code to then go to the SharePoint site and install. If I'm doing it right from within the SharePoint experience, I could directly add that app within SharePoint. So I'm going to go back to SharePoint because I have already, in fact, installed these solutions. And I'm going to go to a list I've created recently. And this list is a list of what I consider the best MVA classes that we've done in recent weeks. And so I'm going to click on the list, and I'm going to go up here into list. And if you look in the ribbon here, you'll see that the Nintex solutions that I've adopted are actually surfaced within the ribbon experience. And so that, again, is where your app would actually show up within the SharePoint experience. So I'm going to click Nintex Forms. Okay. Just thinking about it.
Come on.
Yeah, it's spinning away. It was working before, so I think it's going to work again. It just have to be a little bit patient.
I'll have to get out my sock puppets in a minute here.
Exactly. Here we go.
There we go.
What it's going to do is take you to the Nintex environment, and authenticate you in. If you've already acquired the app, you have that, those credentials to do so. Now, here you go. I have a dummy account called Chunabana Enterprises. That's an inside joke I won't go into. Anyway, you can see before they let you sign in, they remind you, hey, you're still on the trial. Do you want to upsell? So this is the case where they're actually encouraging you to go ahead and acquire the full flown app. We're going to just go right onto the form. So here is the Nintex Forms experience, where that list that I had in SharePoint, just a basic bare bones SharePoint list, can be basically classed up a bit using the SharePoint Designer. So you can drag and drop things like an image to replace the Nintex logo on the form. You can also actually change the default layout of the form if you want. Like, for example, if you think that entry box is too long, you can actually shorten it up right there. So you can actually design the form within a drag and drop experience, all HTML5. Within the web experience. And then once you have it the way you like it, this again is the blank form, you can then go ahead and go up to the designer and publish it, which is what I'm going to do. Okay. And if you go over here on the right, you'll see I've published a desktop compatible version of this form. But what if I say, well, I also want to have the same form usable on a cell phone, on a smartphone? So I can go into here and add more layouts. I can click, for example, Nintex mobile phone, and it'll generate a form that actually would fit on a single screen view within my mobile phone. And I can publish that as well. So I'm actually going to be publishing two different, it tells me the different layouts I'm publishing. I publish that. So I've now actually published two different versions of this form, all with a couple of clicks, really pretty simple. So my forms are published. I'm going to go back to my SharePoint site and go back to the Best MVA class list. Okay. And then I'll click on one of the entries in this list. And there, it is now rendered that form in the Nintex configured version. So again, we did a very simple demo, but you can really tart this up to make the forms really quite beautiful just with a few clicks. So that's great. We now have captured data. We've taken a basic SharePoint list and prettied it up with imagery and all sorts of other controls that were available on a drag and drop basis over in the Nintex Forms Designer. But capturing the data is only the first step. Then you want to embed that data into a workflow, which is one of the classic scenarios for SharePoint. So I'm going to go back up to the list tab, and over here is Nintex Workflow, the other solution that I've downloaded. And I'm going to click on that. Oh, this time it's a little faster. And it wants me to convert that trial again. It's pretty persistent. And here we have the basic workflow form designer, the workflow designer. And it's very much similar to the on-premise product, but all HTML5, all drag and drop, really quite robust, but in a very simple web-based manner. So I'm going to look for a particular workflow. And by the way, let me check out of that for a second. You have all sorts of different functionality, like check in, check out. You can have if-then statements, looping, conditional things. So you can do a whole lot of workflow, and there's a whole bunch of different logic you can exercise. But I'm going to do just about the simplest workflow you can think of, which is I'm going to send an email if something happens. So there's an if-then kind of a thing. So start and stop with an email in between if the conditions are met. So this little yellow arrow says you need to configure the email. Come on. Okay. There we go. So configure. And so I need this, the workflow is going to be I send an email if the list is updated or changed. So I'm going to send an email to myself, which is this test email on this test account. And I need to enter a subject. So I'll say, hey, the list was updated And then I'll go down to the bottom here. And I'll just say, check it out. And save that. So now I've created the workflow. Now I need to publish it. So I'll publish the workflow. I need to give it a name. Let's call it Workflow January, since we're in January. And I'm in the middle of trying to build this list, and I'm soliciting nominations from people that I know. Then I publish it. In the background, it's building the workflow, it's publishing it to that list, and it's aligning it to the SharePoint site. Okay. And by the way, one thing I neglected to mention was they have their own store, which, so again, there's some an example of in-app product marketing. So if you click on this button, it will take you back to the Nintex store where they have a bunch of other custom workflows that plug into other products, not Microsoft products, but other third-party products. So I've now published the workflow, and I'm going to go back to my SharePoint site. Okay, and now I'm going to add a new item to the list. I'm going to actually modify the list, the thing that will trigger the workflow action. So, you know what? I think we're missing one of the best MVA classes of the year. Whoops, that was not what I meant to do. Okay, I'm going to add a new item. I'm going to add a new item. Okay. So I think we're missing one of Scott's classes as being one of the best MVA classes of the year. So
let's go with a classic.
Give me your
favorite. How about getting started with the Office 365 APIs?
There you go. Okay. And I can enter all this information, but it's not, you know, necessarily needed. So I'll save that. Okay, so there you are. You have a new item in the list. So if I go to workflows, Okay, I've now gone ahead and manually published that workflow. And if I go back, I can see workflow January was completed. So in effect, I told manually, this was a manually configured workflow. It can also be automated. And of course, in this case, you probably would want it automated because it's really an alerting kind of a workflow. Tell me when the list has been modified.
Right. Yeah, I think when you created it, you just had the box checked that said you needed to initiate the workflow manually.
Exactly. So. Yep. Exactly, and that was the step. Did I miss that? And I realized I just forgot to point out that feature.
Yeah,
thank you. But it turned out for the best.
Sure.
The workflow was kicked off. I did it manually. Now here is the workflow. It's completed. So now if I go into my Outlook calendar, which is where the notification was designed to be sent.
Yeah, hopefully we got an email waiting for us, right?
We should. And there you go. Hey, the list was updated, just sent a couple minutes ago. So there you go. That is the Nintex workflow. Of course, there's way more robust functionality than what we showed. That was just kind of a basic walkthrough. And with that, I think we're done with the demos.
Yeah, I mean, we took a look at a bunch of demos from things in the store. They give you a really good idea. I have to say, I think it's pretty impressive stuff.
I think so, too.
We didn't have to buy any of that. We got all that for free.
It was all free. Or trial, and they maybe say, hey, what are you going to buy? Come on, don't be so cheap.
Pretty good.
But it does. What it did, though, it gave us a chance to try out the application and show just how powerful it is. And if you have an important workflow need, you definitely got to see what Nintex can bring to the table. So I think we're done with Module 2.
Okay, sounds great. So we'll press on with some more in this course for Modules 3, 4, and 5.
Sounds good.
All right, good.